Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Market Bites. I'm Sam.
And I'm Josh.
And we're here to break down three of the hottest financial events that happened this week, so you can keep your finger on the pulse on your way to work, at the gym, wherever and whenever you have time to get updated.
Please remember that this podcast is intended for educational and informational purposes only. Stay tuned for additional disclosures at the end of today's episode.
So, are you ready?
Here we go.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of Market Bites. Please do remember to like, share, subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, give us a rating. If you are listening on the podcast, I hope you are all doing well. I'm joined by Neja Mulk and Josh Gilbert. Neja, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to see both of you back after 2 weeks. So
yeah,
how are you guys?
Yeah, all good. It has been a while, hasn't it? We've all been on our travels. We've all been away for various reasons. Josh, you've just got back from Thailand, is that right?
That is right, yeah. Beautiful country. I had a nice few days there as well. And you've just got back from Naples yourself, Sam, Italy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, the pizza there, is, for anyone that's ever been there, and the pasta is just... it's just a joke compared to what we get in the UK. I went to an event, Lake Como, last year, probably not far off a year ago, with some of our diamond clients. And I sat on a table with obviously a load of Italians, and they said, we really want to go to the UK again, because they'd been before, but the food is so bad. And I was like, well, look, there are other places in the UK you can go to eat, but they're so true as well. The food in comparison to Italy is awful. But Neja, you've just got back from Croatia, is that right? Or recently,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, that's right. I was there last week for 3 days. It's really close for me. We spent 3 days close to the seaside in our camper van, and it was great. Just a few days off on sun, so it was awesome.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I can imagine. There's I know in the summer they've got quite a lot of festivals there that a few of my mates used to go to back in the day, and they always looked amazing. Okay, today our three subjects, we'll talk about Woolworths, we'll talk about Berkshire Hathaway's annual meeting, and then we're also going to talk about Starbucks. So Josh, why Woolworths?
Yeah, I'm going to bring it back down under today, back to Australia. I'm going to talk about one of the biggest brands here. It might not necessarily be a household global name, but it is absolutely a household name here in Australia. Shares have just hit a 52-week low. They're about 17% down or so year to date. So I wanted to sort of touch on whether this is a good time to sort of invest in this business that is Australia's largest supermarket chain, or whether it's going to face a number of challenges still moving forward as well. So yeah, wanted to sort of cover, you know, a very well-known business in Australia that is seemingly going through a tough time, and whether it ultimately opens up as an opportunity or not.
Neja, you've gone for the meeting?
Yeah, today I will focus on Berkshire Hathaway's annual meeting. It took place last weekend. And in case of that, any of our listeners don't know, every year actually investors gather in Omaha to hear from Warren Buffett himself. And this year was special because it was first time Buffett spoke since his partner Charlie Munger passed away. And alongside Buffett, his close associates Greg Abel and Ajit Jain also participated in this discussion. They were talking everything about Berkshire's future, its legacy, and also economy. So in this six-hour Q&A session, there was really plenty for us to learn from. So I will discuss about that.
Yeah, hopefully in less than 6 hours, but I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to talk about Starbucks. They were in the news, or they've been in the news over the last week. Their earnings from last week were pretty poor, and they've been down considerably since then and before then as well. So I want to know, or discuss, is there a little bit of value there, or is there actually more room to go to the downside? So hopefully we can answer those questions. First subject then, you know, we don't get over the pond much, Josh, but we're looking at one of Australia's biggest brands today. In Woolworths. What do we need to know, and then why is it on the radar?
Yeah, so there'll be probably quite a lot of UK listeners listening in here thinking, I've heard that brand name before. You know, I've grown up with that. But unfortunately, they aren't connected and there's no pick a mix in this particular store, which is a real shame. Woolworths was founded in Australia in 1924. It's a household name here, as I mentioned, in Australia, and it's the biggest supermarket chain in the country. They also operate in New Zealand as well. They actually operate there under a different name. They go under the name Countdown, which is slightly strange, you know, probably due to legal reasons. But they've got 1,400 stores. They serve around 24 million customers each week, which is almost the equivalent of Australia's population. So, you know, pretty decent numbers if you're serving, you know, that many people each week. You've got a good business on your hand. And that in turn made them the largest company by revenue in Australia in 2023. Which might surprise a few people because we have some, you know, powerhouse names here. I think BHP, one of the biggest miners in the world. We've got some of the, you know, some huge banks here as well. Commonwealth Bank, Westpac, ANZ. We've also got, you know, a lot of other, you know, big companies as well. But especially I think those miners make a lot of money from iron ore. So to sort of outpace them in terms of revenue, just sort of goes to show how big this business is. And I'm highlighting it because I said at the start, their shares have had a tough start to the year and they have. And we are, of course, seeing spending habits change. Consumers are feeling the pinch. We've got interest rates at record highs. You know, food inflation has, you know, for Woolworths specifically, infected their pricing. And competition, you know, has really stepped up as well. So we've got Coles. That's the second biggest supermarket here in Australia. We've also got the battlers coming in. We've got Aldi, and people will across the globe know this, that, you know, they're pretty much taking on all of the big chains. They are, of course, a private company, but have done very well in their execution across Europe and obviously now in Australia. We've also got Costco as well. So that sort of brought in something of a price war. You know, margins across sort of, you know, all their businesses are probably sort of taking a hit, particularly from those of Coles and Woolworths, which we can obviously publicly see here in Australia. Obviously, Costco in the US is much bigger. So obviously what they do here probably isn't going to have as much of an effect. But they, you know, for Woolworths specifically, sales in Q3 2024, we're talking fiscal Q3, so that sort of the period just gone, they were beaten by their biggest rivals, which was Coles. So that's the bad news. That's the bad news out of the way. The good news is why it's worth watching. The business absolutely dominates the grocery market here. As I say, competition is heating up, but they own about 37% market share, which is pretty massive given, you know, as I say, that they're serving about 24 million people a week. And that has grown over recent years despite competition stepping up. So it just shows, you know, really the more stores you have, the more convenient you can be, you know, you will continue to sort of own market share. And what they've done really well compared to competitors is, you know, really stayed up to date with, you know, tech. You know, they've really built out their e-commerce platforms. They've invested really heavily. And I think that's setting them up for future success, you know, especially in a very, very traditional business like groceries. You know, many would think it's a very boring business, which, you know, typically it is. But if you can invest in the right areas, you're setting yourself up for the future. Q3 saw 23% growth online in sales, and they've got nearly 10 million active members through their reward base as well. So when we talk about sort of bases and memberships and things like that, we think of probably Prime, we think of Disney Plus, we think of Netflix, think about Apple and their services business. Having a membership base in this day and age is so rewarding for a business to not only understand consumer habits, but also being able to sort of target those users through promotions, through ongoing subscriptions. You know, it's a huge, huge win. So 10 million active members is massive. And their online shopping, e-commerce base, delivery service, customer service, that's giving them the differential to, you know, the likes of Aldi and Costco that are coming in that don't have those sort of same options. They're really looking to sort of steal market share by reaching those cost-conscious shoppers. And what we're also seeing in Australia specifically that's, you know, worth noting, and one of the reasons why I'm also looking at Woolworths, we've got record migration in Australia, the highest numbers that we've ever seen in 2023, and that's continued into 2024. And that's going to be a big boost for, you know, supermarkets, particularly Woolworths, given they dominate the market share. These people, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, have to shop somewhere. And when you own 37% of the market share, you're probably going to be at the top of the leaderboard as that first choice. So yeah, they're in a really great position to sort of capitalize on what is a growing population in Australia.
You mentioned that they're down 17% year to date, if I remember correctly. And how do their financials stack up, and what other risks they're facing right now?
Yeah, well, there absolutely are risks there. And I think that's probably key to point. So we're looking at this as potentially, is it a good time? Is it an opportunity? Well, you know, there's always both sides to it, right? We've got risks. But a lot of that is baked in. And that is because, you know, we've seen these risks coming through. We've seen troubles, and that's why the shares are down 17%. But they've had plenty of scrutiny from the media. Lots here in Australia, talks of sort of price gouging, you know, ramping up prices, particularly at a time, you know, when consumers are struggling. So again, not had a great time in the media. And they're also under regulatory investigation as well for sort of similar issues. And that's not, as I say, done themselves any favors on the PR front. They've had slower sales to sort of start the year. And that's really dented investor confidence all at the same time. And then that investigation I mentioned is still ongoing as well. So it kind of leaves a bit of an overhang on the stock. But we are seeing a bit of a change. CEO Brad Banducci, who's been in charge for about 8 years, he's stepping down. He's not exactly managed the PR situation very well, this sort of media speculation. He had an interview on what is a Four Corners interview, as it's called here in Australia. So it's a sit-down interview, you know, very direct questioning, and he actually walked out of it at the time, and it blew up in sort of the media as, you know, a CEO not being sort of able to sort of handle tough questioning. So it probably feels like a bit of a timely pivot, and he's actually being replaced by a lady by the name of Amanda Bardwell. She's successfully run the e-commerce and the loyalty programs in the past, which I've mentioned. So it seems like a great fit if you've led two very successful parts of the business. It's probably a great person to sort of come in and take over. And then in terms of financials, in February, reported about $35 billion in revenue. EBITDA grew by about 8% year over year. So look, we're not seeing huge growth, but, you know, we're likely to see that sort of EBITDA growing in the single digits. But again, this is a defensive business. It's been around for a very long, long time. We're not expecting to see outsized growth from, as I say, a very mature business such as Woolworths that is in a, you know, a consumer staples type business. But in terms of estimates, we're looking for earnings of $1.42 for the full year 2024. That's going to come in August. And that sort of gives the company a price to earnings ratio of about 21 times. So looking at that, given the quality of the business, given its maturity, given its market share, given its growth in e-commerce, its loyalty program, and that growth in EBITDA that's still coming, I think it's probably pretty fairly valued at that level. And I think analysts tend to agree. I was reading a note from Goldman Sachs today. They've just upgraded its price target to $39.90. It last traded today on the ASX at about $30.90. So again, from that price target, you're looking at about a 29% upside, again, pointing towards continued growth, shares being sort of oversold, and, you know, continued growth in e-commerce. And it also pays a really attractive 3.5% dividend yield as well. So not only could we see potential growth to the upside, we're also going to be getting a nice dividend yield at the same time. So look, the next few months here are going to be certainly challenging for the business, one that is, as I say, a very well-known business. But I think many investors will see this recent weakness as an opportunity to own a high-quality defensive business at an attractive valuation.
Yeah, I was just having a look at the technical analysis side of things, which I know isn't for everyone, but for those that do look, Woolworths, anyone can look at the chart and see it's come under a bit of pressure recently, but there's a key level around $32, which is the low that we had of the week of the 17th of October 2022. We recently broke below that for the first time, and 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks below there now, but each time we've tried to go back above it, we fail to. So it's clear to me that it's a good line in the sand for the bulls and the bears to sort of fight it all out from. So if we get back above that, it might might to some be an indication that the low is in and we can start to push to the upside. But quite an interesting chart nonetheless. You could argue it being in range bound before that. So it's, yeah, broken lower, fine. Bears in control for now. But back above $32, I think that changes a little bit. One to watch out. Let us know if you're listening, watching, what you think as well. Neja, we'll come on to you and we'll talk about Warren Buffett. How did he respond to those questions about the sale of 13% of their stake in Apple? And what other significant moves did they make during quarter one?
That selling 13% of that their position in Apple was one of the major news shareholders were asking about in that Q&A session. If we go back, Berkshire Hathaway actually first reported Apple stock in their portfolio in first quarter of 2016. It started small, but they kept adding to their position, and at the end, they owned about 6% of all Apple shares. It is estimated that Buffett paid about $27 on average for each Apple share. However, in this first quarter results, they revealed that they sold about 13% of their stake in Apple. So everyone was wondering about that. When he was asked about the reasons for that move, he stated that he expects higher taxes in the US. He mentioned that he is okay with paying taxes now at 21% rate, but he thinks that we might see increases in the future. So actually, he sold Apple shares to avoid potential higher taxes later. Despite that, he mentioned several times that he still believes in Apple's future and iPhone might be one of the greatest products ever made. There was another decision that he commented during this Q&A session, and that was selling all of their stake in Paramount. Berkshire Hathaway started investing in Paramount in 2022, but they haven't performed well, though. They've been facing challenges from recovering from last year, Hollywood strikes and weak advertising market. They saw declining US cable subscription, and all of that kind of hurt their profits. Buffett took full responsibility for that decision, and he mentioned that they actually lost quite a bit of money. If you're wondering what's that quite a bit of money, it is estimated that they lost about $1.5 billion. So yeah, that's quite a bit of money for Warren Buffett. But I think that just from those two cases, we can learn few important lessons for our own investment journeys. First, I think that understanding tax policies is crucial when investing because taxes can significantly impact our returns. And another key takeaway for me was that everyone makes mistakes, even the most successful investors. And sometimes it might be best just to admit them, move on, and seek opportunities elsewhere.
I think that's a really good point as well, is that, you know, you're the best of them all. Mr. Buffett is going to make mistakes, $1.5 billion mistakes as well. Again, probably a drop in the ocean for his sizable portfolio. But if you're having a bad day, remember that Warren Buffett lost $1.5 billion on a trade. So if you're losing on a trade, then don't worry, because Warren Buffett's probably done a lot worse than you. One of the big takeaways, I think, as well from the meeting was obviously that decision to obviously sell that Apple stake. And obviously the Apple stake obviously then goes to cash, and the cash pile has obviously now mounted up pretty significantly. Yeah. And that sort of, I think, begged the question of, one, what are they going to do with that cash? But also really the focus then goes to back to Warren Buffett, right? Because he is getting older. We're sort of looking to that legacy of what comes after Buffett, because, you know, for as long as we know, and, you know, Berkshire Hathaway is sort of Warren Buffett. So we're sort of looking to that legacy plan. You know, did they sort of provide any comments, Neza, on sort of the future of Berkshire, maybe without Warren?
Yeah, when you mentioned their investments and their huge cash pile, he mentioned a few times that Berkshire will remain their main focus in the US. So we won't see major moves, I think so. But those questions about succession are regular on every annual meeting, and it seems like they have everything planned out. Warren Buffett sees both Greg Abel and Ajit Jain as key players in Berkshire Hathaway's future, Greg Abel is currently in charge of these non-insurance operations at Berkshire Hathaway. And on the other hand, Ajit Jain is primarily responsible for all this insurance business Berkshire Hathaway has. Now, Abel is set to become a CEO, overseeing both acquisitions and the substantial investment portfolio they have. Meanwhile, Jane's knowledge of insurance will be a key to running Berkshire's insurance business successfully. This year, it was already emotional without Charlie and his straightforward answers, and I can't even imagine their annual meeting without Warren Buffett, to be honest. But at the same time, I think they're well prepared, and succession will be actually just a formality for their next operations, but the change will be a massive shock for all of us, I'm sure about that.
Yeah, and you mentioned about it being emotional. I saw a clip with Warren Buffett, and he sort of finished speaking, and he sort of said, pass it over to sort of Charlie, and the kind of room stopped, and they sort of clapped, and that was quite an emotional moment there. And he sort of said he was just so used to sort of doing it, and it being sort of the first one, I'm sure that would have been pretty tough.
It was really sad.
Yeah, you went as well, didn't you? We spoke about this before, Neza. You'd been before, but I was looking at is it in the same place every year?
Yeah, it's in the same place every year. I've been there last year. This year I only watched it from my home, but it's not the same. But still, we can learn a lot from that. But being there in that arena with
amazing.
All this atmosphere with all investors, that's like really one time event.
An arena full of investors. Imagine the power you need to have to fill an arena. That's something that. No,
can you imagine people go there standing in the line at like in midnight just to get in first to be able to ask him questions?
Wow.
Well, I think we might be able to sell out Wembley for Digest and Invest one day.
One day.
What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Yeah.
We'll be there. We'll watch our teams there, and then we'll follow up and do the Digest and Invest podcast in Wembley just after. Sam, back to you. We were talking about at the top of the episodes what we're looking at. You were looking at the share price of Starbucks. It's been moving lower for a while. How's it looking? Had a pretty poor report. Really, if we take that away from earnings season, it probably really stands out because earnings season has been pretty good. But after a poor report, you are going to stand out. And that's what Starbucks has done, right?
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And I think it's a good point you make. If you have if your report isn't that good this earnings season, you've been punished, haven't you? And you really are sort of sticking out like a sore thumb. And it was a bit of a shock, I guess, in a way to some people. Certainly the market. I guess if the market goes against you that much, it is a shock, albeit it had been trending lower for quite some time. So then it begs the question, should people be that surprised? But they are. Look, surprise decline in same store sales led to the company's miss and obviously poor quarterly earnings and revenue. I mean, look, since the report, the company's shares have fallen 17%. I think since that, they're down about 22%. Over the year, the market value cap is down to about 80 odd billion. It's pretty poor, has to be said. I mean, for those that care about the exact sort of figures, EPS was 0.68, which is well below the consensus, which was expected to be about 0.80. So that was down 7% year over year. A little bit down to weak net revenue of 8.6 billion, which was down 2% year over year and 6.5% below consensus. So another couple of misses there. So when you just sort of say that, you say, okay, well, I can see why they're a little bit lower. And there was also a 240 basis point decline in operating margin. China was pretty bad, worst sort of decline in comparable sales there, minus 11% in quarter two. And how many shops are in China? 18% of all Starbucks stores are in China. So it's obviously a very key region. And we'll talk about the recovery or potential recovery later. But of course, China is going to be a big part of that. Having a look at the chart itself, and the reason why I guess it's also in the news is that we're trading the lowest since, or give or take, since June 2022. Which is roughly about $70 a share. The last time we were there, I guess, if you wanted to the in the glass half full camp. Last time we traded there, we rallied as much as 61%. Is that going to happen again? I guess you could say, well, last time we were here, it did. And also the last time before that, it did as well. If we go back to June 2020, it then rallied to what was the all-time high, which we had back in July 2021. That's three Julys in a row I've mentioned. Is it going to be July this year that we find a bit of support? We'll have to wait and see. But historically, pretty oversold as well for those that look at different technical tools. Your RSI is the most sold off it's been since at one point during the pandemic. So if there is to be support found, it could well be that it's not too far away. Fundamentally, things do need to change. If you look at the all-time high to where we're trading now, we're lower by 42%, which is obviously significantly, it's a big move for us to get back to that all-time high. The share price has to rise 74-75%. So a big move needed from here for us to recover back to those heights. We're historically sold off quite a bit. But Josh, you mentioned earlier about the consumer feeling the pinch, and obviously that's the same thing here for Starbucks. Obviously you've got issues with sort of pulling out the Middle East as well. I think that's affected sales, but overall, you know, I can understand the move to the downside, but I do wonder whether you start to think, is there a bit of value here?
Yeah, they were really punished after this earnings report. And yeah, it was a major move. Just a fun fact, you know how many Starbucks we have in Slovenia? Zero. So they didn't have any change here. Obviously, competition is really high in that field. And what do you think that they need to turn to, just to go back, to turn things around, what they have to do?
I reckon our listeners would have been saying, I reckon there is zero there as well. I reckon that won't be too much for a shock for them. But one person who's spoken up about, you know, what they should do is their ex-CEO, Howard Schultz. And I found that quite interesting to sort of stick in their roaring again. Imagine that you're the new CEO of a company, you have a bad quarter, and then suddenly the old CEO goes, you know what, you should try doing this. So I found it quite funny. He actually posted it on LinkedIn for anyone that wants to go check it out, which again, I think is quite funny. But he was saying he believes the company will recover if it improves its US stores. He wrote that the company needs to improve its mobile order and pay experience and overhaul how it creates new drinks to focus on premium items that set it apart. I'll try and post the link for the LinkedIn post in the bio somewhere for anyone that does want to check it out. And he wrote, and I'll quote it here, the stores require a maniacal focus on the customer experience through the eyes of a merchant. The answer does not lie in data, but in the store. Senior leaders, including board members, need to spend more time with those who wear the green apron. One of their first actions should be to reinvent the mobile ordering and payment platform which Starbucks pioneered to once again make it the uplifting experience it was designed to be. The go-to-market strategy needs to be overhauled and elevated with coffee-forward innovation that inspires partners and creates differentiation in the marketplace, reinforcing the company's premium position. Through it all, focus on being experiential, not transactional. Look, the brand is obviously one of the most recognized in the world, isn't it? You know, I mean, well, not where you live, Neza, at the moment, but for most parts, it is. And, you know, I think it's fair to say in China, I think that, you know, the Hang Seng's in a bull market right now, 20% off the low. You're starting to see things kind of look like they could be getting, you know, turning a corner, getting better there. So it won't be, I'd imagine, too long before we start to see business return. However, you know, people have been saying that about China for a while, so maybe have that with a little bit of an asterisk. But if that starts to improve, you know, your evaluations here, where people might look and say, okay, I can have a little bit of that. Historically oversold, the last time we traded at these levels, we went 50-60% higher. You know, maybe it does need to go a little bit lower, but then suddenly you're trading at the 2020 pandemic low for one of the most recognizable businesses in the world. And as soon as the bad news gets a little bit better, or there's less bad news, that's when you can start to see a bit of a recovery. So I think you need a bit of time, you need a bit of patience. But if we fast forward 1 year, 2 year, I'd be surprised if it was any lower, I'd imagine. Anyone got thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think as a business, in terms of when you have so much focus in sort of one area, and we've seen it obviously with Apple as well, with China, and how much it can sort of really affect you. And we think about, you know, yes, that recovery sort of might be coming back. But if we think about China specifically in those two brands, Apple and Starbucks, you've got deflation in the region. You've got consumers who really don't want to spend because they just think prices are sort of going to get cheaper. And you've got a government for the time being that have been reluctant to offer stimulus to the consumer. They've been looking at the property market that continues to get weaker. And if your home value is decreasing and your prices are sort of getting cheaper, then, you know, you can't blame Chinese consumers for keeping money in the bank and sort of not spending. So that recovery is going to happen. We are going to see it come through, but it is going to take a bit of time, and it will continue to sort of affect those, you know, brands that do have such large dominance there. Think Tesla, think Apple, and think Starbucks as well. So a bumpy road, but it does look like, I think, as you said, Sam, we've started to maybe see a bottom. You know, equities in China have looked like they may have found a bottom for now, but we've had quite a few false starts over the last sort of 2 years, I'd probably say, with China. So I won't be getting my hopes up just yet.
Yeah, same. I totally agree. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion around China, and I think that major turnaround will be needed so we can actually see recovery there. And when that happens, all of those big brands that have exposure there might see a turnaround as well. They are obviously dependent a lot on that market, but it have to go to the better. So we will see that, but it's impossible to say when. At least yeah. I think so.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. An interesting one to watch for sure. And we will be back next week to discuss more stories on market bites. Neja and Josh, as always, thank you very much for joining.
You have been listening to Digest and Invest by eToro. For more information, use eToro.com. This podcast is for information and education purposes only and should not be taken as investment advice, a personal recommendation, or an offer of or solicitation to buy or sell any financial instruments. This material has been prepared without taking into account any particular recipient's investment objectives or financial situation and has not been prepared in accordance with the legal and regulatory requirements to promote independent research. Past performance is not an indication of future results.